Chris Brogan is the author of a number of best-selling books. The one that put him and his co-author on the map, as it were, was Trust Agents, Using the Web to Build Influence, Improve Reputation, and Earn Trust. That's a 2009 John Wiley and Sons book. And as you can tell from that title, Chris Brogan, although he's an expert on the variety of ways that we can use the internet, video, audio, and especially the written word to impress others, he's especially interested in human relationships. He's a hero of mine in the world of social media, and I'm really pleased that he could join me here on the program. Chris Brogan, welcome to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
Dr. Andy, totally thrilled to be here. And, you know, just a wee bit terrified because, you know, I haven't really studied my iambic pentameter as much as I should, but I'm hoping I can keep up.
You know, iambic pentameter doesn't come up on this show as often as you might think. Though when I started the show 12 years ago, there were then, as there are now, a number of people in the world of tech and business who wanted to come on and talk about their latest release. I remember once, about 11 years ago, I had the president of Palm Computing on this radio show. And I had a rule back then that if you wanted to come on the show and plug something, you had to bring a poem and read it. And evidently, the poem that was most appreciated by the CEOs and other big shots in America's companies is The Road Not Taken by Robert Frost, which you're a New England guy, so I'm sure you can appreciate that. The ironic part to me, of course, was that these folks, they took the road most taken because that was the poem that typically people would choose. So, but you're off the hook with regard to poetry. We're going to talk mostly about technology and about your new book. Congratulations on that. The Impact Equation, Are You Making Things Happen or Just Making Noise? It's a great title. When I saw the title and read some about it, it made me think that a lot of the people who had bought your previous books had probably taken your advice. A lot of us have created blogs and created personae on a variety of social networks. And it might be that with your new book, you're addressing all of the noise that we're making, all of these fans of yours.
Dr. Andy, it's the weirdest thing. In 2009, we wrote a book that was not a book about social media, wherein which we said, you know, if you really wanted to make your own game and stand out from everybody else, there's this new digital channel that no one's really using very well yet, and you could just own the world with that channel. And people said, I'm not so sure. And then they just sort of gently rolled into places like Twitter and Facebook, and then a bunch of experts showed up to teach them how they could tweet and post or whatever. And then nothing happened. The cash register didn't ring. There was no mad influx of business. There was no sudden, amazing, influential change to most people's businesses, except for these, you know, repeatedly vaunted examples. And so, in a way, what Julian Smith and I felt was that we failed everyone because we just weren't clear enough about what one might do with that new channel.
Right.
So we came back and said, well, given that everyone's on the channel now, here's something new to think about, which, by the way, interestingly, what we're using a lot of examples in our speeches and whatnot are how to use off digital sometimes or how to kind of zig while everyone else zags. And that's, again, how do you make some kind of contrast so that people can figure there's a difference between you and someone else.
And so that idea of standing out or distinguishing yourself is certainly important in the business world. But and we might point to, for instance, your own early embrace of Google Plus when there were many skeptics, let's say. But I'm wondering if that to what extent that works as a strategy to get yourself noticed, or as you said, with regard to the bottom line, actually make more money from one's business.
I believe it works when applied with some amount of heart. I mean, there's pretty much no strategy or technical execution that if you just kind of phone it in, you shouldn't be surprised when nothing happens. You know, it's like getting the gym membership, driving to the gym and hanging out, drinking the water out of the water bubbler. Strangely, your muscles don't get toned and you don't lose all that weight. although maybe you help your bladder. So with regards to using all these kinds of tools and these opportunities, it's not that always everyone must stand out, but it's that, you know, for instance, people are looking for jobs quite often. You know, look at your UC Davis community. You've got a bunch of people who are really smart, who've spent a lot of money on getting their degree in order and are leaving with that little tap on the shoulder that says, congratulations, you know pretty much what everyone else sitting beside you on either side knows. Good luck finding those jobs that the 40 and 50-somethings aren't letting go of.
Right.
And, you know, how does one enter into that world? Well, there's a lot of examples now of people who either take the digital route when everyone else isn't, or take a relationship-based model, or do something to sort of build a little bit more than the typical, here's my resume, here's my intent, and here's my wishes for salary and technology that you're going to give me when I show up. And I think, so on the student side, there's that. On the business side, with regards to revenue, no one ever really took the tools to heart as to what they might really do with them, which is to think of it as sort of being like a world-class concierge, you know, really giving even more value via these digital channels than before. And the examples of people who are doing interesting things are few and far between, and sometimes are mired in still old-style technology. And yet I'll give them a little credit, because what they're doing is they're sharing what amounts to old-fashioned media into this new platform space where they can at least get more sharing of their content. So, for example, Ford just put out a holiday Gymkhana video, which is those people that drift around cones and things in sporty little cars. And it's getting lots and lots and lots of views because it's kind of novel and it's kind of fun. And the currency of the web seems to either be entertainment or actionable information we can use to better ourselves. And so if one feels entertained, then they share. So Ford's getting a lot of free traction on something that they built for the mainstream but knew that the web would appreciate. But that's not really where I went with it, Dr. Andy. I thought that where people could really have a benefit is that, though it's not especially scalable, the sense that you could be seen and heard, which is humankind's greatest need, is to feel wanted. I think this is what these tools do best, and nobody's exactly jumping up to assume that role.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Chris Brogan, and with Julian Smith, he's written a book that came out this past fall called The Impact Equation, Are You Making Things Happen or Just Making Noise? I'm interested in what you're saying about Ford, because there's a kind of creativity there, and we certainly still associate creativity with Madison Avenue and trying to get a particular message noticed in a novel way. But from the way you're describing it, that there may be a kind of faddishness to it that we often associate with the internet, that YouTube videos will get a lot of views if they become today's meme, but then will be quickly forgotten as we embrace the new shiny object, leaving some business people to wonder, well, how do I harness this sort of creativity or these different tools in a sustained way?
It's a really good question. And when I talk to larger companies, as I am wont to do, they usually have these complaints about, well, we just don't have enough people, or we just don't have enough resources. Meanwhile, the main brewing company up in Portland, Maine, and around that area are two guys, just two human beings. And one of them is the CFO and also the person who brews the beer. And the other one is the CEO and also the one who gets the distribution deals and goes around to the different bars and gets them to tap the beer. And it's two guys and two humans in the whole company. Occasionally they hire their friends if they've got a busy order. And so for the most part, they're handling all of their digital media. They're handling all their social media marketing and all that. So I just can't accept that people are too busy. On the other side of that, Sir Richard Branson does all his own social media making. He runs 400 companies and lives on an island. I'd say he's a reasonably busy gentleman, and yet he finds the time as well. So it's not really a matter of time. It's just a sense of, what am I going to do that's sustainable? What am I going to do that could actually really have a value? And there's a lot of people coming at that in different ways. Some people are saying content marketing, which is kind of a new big buzzword for making media that's of some kind of auxiliary value to the person who's consuming it, as opposed to advertising type marketing. Email marketing is back and alive and well. More and more people are saying that their email is dead, and at the same time, it's the first thing we check on our devices. And mobile marketing is the other thing that nobody's really taking advantage of. Right now, I just saw that for the first time for a while, we're sustaining something like $9 billion in digital spend, but less than 1% of that is going to mobile. And yet, not too many people sleep with their laptop beside their head, but they have their phone right beside their head as if they're a superhero or a brain surgeon waiting for an emergency call in the middle of the night.
Right, right. We keep ours at least on the bedside table, at least 2 feet away from our heads, because my wife's still worried about EMFs. I think the studies disprove the need for that worry. But as you're describing, our phones are usually not too far away. And can you hand me my phone is what we say in the morning instead of could you get me a cup of coffee? Well, one thing I really like about the work that you do, Chris Brogan, with regard to a variety of media is the work that you've done with video. And we were talking about the fact that you've had a chance at conferences and so forth to interact with a lot of other folks who are also concerned about the relationship between getting things done and just making noise. And one thing I appreciate about your videos is the enthusiasm you show when you're videotaping a kind of impromptu review of a book that you've just read and that really speaks to you in one way or another. So I'm wondering if you could say something about your own use of video and also why it is you say so many nice things about the books written by your competitors.
Oh, well, you know, first off, what was his name? The really nice Chinese gentleman who won the Nobel Peace Prize, not this year, but year before, David something or other. His banner that they flew all over Norway when he won said, "I have no enemies." And I feel that way. I mean, I don't ever look at my colleagues as competitors because, frankly, the way it seems to shake out is that people buy one of us for some different reason. Sometimes it's a price reason. Sometimes it's someone has more small business specific experience or whatever. But, you know, when I get excited, one of the things that's just seemingly been missing in business for so long is just raw passion. And it's not that we're always going to wake up every single day and feel rippingly passionate, but there are those people. And I mean, you see it around campus and you see it sometimes when you visit companies and whatnot. There are those people that are just so thrilled to be on the globe and so happy to be alive. And I just think that somewhere in the 60s, I guess, we were told that we should be dispassionate. We should be somewhat more cog-like. And I have just for the longest time pushed back at that. And in the 90s, when I finally got a chance to meet Tom Peters, the author and futurist type guy from the 90s mostly, but still out there, when I finally got to meet him, I said, you know, you got me in so much trouble in the 90s. I'd read your books and then I'd go rushing in and shout at the bosses, we need to do this. And it just, you know, it was always a misery because no one wanted to do the things I thought were great and I just didn't have any influence. And I guess maybe passion and the ability to figure out influence were the two of the bigger seeds. And throw on top of that a real, you know, belief in community and culture as a way to kind of build these sorts of platforms of value that I talk about in the book, for instance. That's the recipe of me, I suppose.
That's great. Well, the voice you're hearing is that of Chris Brogan. And with Julian Smith, he's written a book called The Impact Equation. Are you making things happen or just making noise? Chris is author or co-author of a number of other books. One of his first and most famous is Trust Agents, Using the Web to Build Influence, Improve Reputation, and Earn Trust. He also has books such as Social Media 101, Tactics and Tips to Develop Your Business Online. And a book that I've appreciated is his most recent book on Google+, which, like a bunch of these, I have on my Kindle. You can find out more about him at chrisbrogan.com. He's also launched a number of initiatives, including PodCamp, including one that I was reading about in preparation. I want to ask you about Human Business Works. But I want to ask you first, because we're coming up on the end of this year and the beginning of a new one, of this idea of Brave New Year. What is Brave New Year?
So Brave New Year is a group of people. It's a sort of course. It's an 8-week course that I put together, a digital course, where people get together and discuss their visions, their goals, the plans that they're going to use to execute them, how to build a community of support, how to understand the underpinnings of what it takes to do that, especially the bravery elements, because I think a lot of times when people get ready to have some kind of a, if they want to make a significant change in their life, to steal from my friends, the Heath brothers, they figure out how to do the rider really well. And they maybe start to understand what the elephant's intentions are, but they don't have the path, meaning they haven't really laid out a chance to put success in their way, to steal a phrase that my colleague Rob Hatch uses in his work, Like You're on Vacation Project. So Brave New Year is getting a bunch of people together, a community of support, and that says, first off, you're going to commit to making a really big and brave change in your life, whatever that's going to be. Second off, here's some tools to get that done. Third, let's all work together for accountability purposes, for sort of honing and sharing purposes, to make sure that not only do you have the vision and the plan, but you have a community of support to make that work. And that's how we've laid out what the mission of Human Business Works is. It's a company that sells essentially courses and media property type stuff. But what we're also doing that's a little different is we're making sure that the community is the most important asset that people come away with. And that's because we, what I've learned through some of my study and my research is that you can have all the greatest intentions in the world, but if you're still on an island of your own mental thought, then there's just so much less reason to commit to the better changes. I got that. I stole a lot of that from Charles Duhigg's The Power of Habit, and then I kind of went back and read some of the bibliography to see where he picked those ideas up as well. And I believe pretty firmly in the model.
That's great. And I use a version of that model in the classes I teach here at UC Davis. And it's something that we've been pushing at the Center for Excellence in Teaching and Learning and at Academic Technology Services. And that is, how do we teach classes that are student-centered and activity-driven and that depend upon lots of peer feedback as well as feedback from the professor? And students learn a lot more and help to develop their own sense of confidence when they are sharing work with each other and working in groups. And think, pair, share is something that many faculty here at UC Davis and other universities use to divide even a really large class up into tiny incidental groups of people nearby and share ideas and then share them with the whole room. And it sounds like you're doing something similar in that you're focusing on a community, a cohort of people that's created with one of your courses, rather than making all the conversations be in only two directions. In other words, between you and the people who are opting to spend some time with you over the course of 8 weeks or so.
Correct. And that's a challenge. I mean, in my writing course, I have one called Blog Topics, the Masterclass. That was something that just came up fairly recently because all my first class that came through, the graduates all asked right away, could we stick around? Can we stay in the group? And I said, of course, absolutely. I mean, it's a benefit to me to have you there. But now what they're doing is they're sort of mentoring people who are coming along behind. They're helping keep each other on their game. And from that experience, from that belief that, wow, this really does make it a lot better, it's just the opportunity. I mean, it's been said so many times, once you learn something, the best thing you could do to really absorb it is to teach it. And I think the only hard thing for me about that, Dr. Andy, is that I have to shut up. You know, I have to be right. Really sit on my hands because I want to jump in so badly. But, of course, that will skew the experience.
Well, it sounds like you have enlisted a lot of volunteer teaching assistants to help with subsequent generations of these classes that you're offering, which must be really gratifying for you.
I can't believe, honestly, it's a split between that Tom Sawyer paint my fence feeling.
Right.
You know, I just feel like I'm pulling one over on you people, and I'll tell them that, and they'll say, no, you're not, it's fun. And then I'm thinking, oh God, one day they'll wake. And then secondly, you know, it's just this fear or belief that, you know, without the community, is the class really worth it? And I say no, but we'll see how it works.
Chris Brogan is my guest, and he's the author of a number of books about some of the topics that we've been talking about. The most recent is The Impact Equation, Are You Making Things Happen or Just Making Noise? I think one thing that must be a lot of fun for you, Chris, is the way that you've set up your life as if you were, say, perpetually in graduate school, by which I mean that you're always learning things, you're always excited about a new topic, a new book, a new initiative, a new group of colleagues to work with. And I'm wondering, where is it that you first got that love of learning and that idea of lifelong learning? Is that something that you picked up in elementary school or high school, or was there an important mentor in college who got you excited about just this idea of learning without regard to one particular topic or another?
That's a really great question. I would say that first and foremost, it came from home. And I know how ridiculously fortunate I am to be able to say that. My parents were both very encouraging about learning of all kinds. And we were raised in a upper lower class financial demographic. My dad was working like 3 or 4 jobs so that my mom could stay home and raise us. And one of the biggest expenses way back in the day was a set of encyclopedias that they just couldn't afford, really. But, oh, my goodness, they never regretted it, because my little brother, even more than I, would sit down and just crack open J and say, I think I'll look at Japan and, you know, whatever else came in J. And
right.
That's the real fertile soil that it came from. But then I had this really strange relationship with college that, you know, is a little frustrates some people. But I attended 7 different colleges and never bothered to finish. I went to a state school on my parents' dime, and then I went to 6 different universities around the Boston area, where there's 26 colleges, by the way, on different companies' dimes. And always there was either like a false start, or it was just a sense of I was too busy getting the experience to want the academic experience. And I just – nothing really felt that I could make it my own, except – probably out of all of them, the one that I really liked was Lesley University in Cambridge, Mass., which had a lot of individually guided study type programs. And when I kind of clued into that, that's where my mom got her degree. I thought, wow, now this is something. Like, this is the idea that I've always wanted, which is how could I really guide myself along? But I think, you know, not that I'm an educational theorist, but I would say that my armchair opinion about it all was that what really could have helped me a lot was if people had done a much better job of saying, well, this is how this is going to help you in the future, versus just do it because we told you to.
Right.
And, you know, my goodness, the things I wish I had a law degree, I wish I had a journalism degree, not because I wanted to practice in either field, but of course it's just so powerful to have that background. And I may still go back and do some of that, but to your point, I mean, what I think I enjoy the very most is the lack of structure, but the willingness to try to build my own version of a course and learn from that experience and then share with others.
And I guess one could say that with all the writing that you've been doing, teaching of writing and blogging, and before I let you go, I want to ask you again about the importance and centrality of blogging, of the work you do. It's almost like you do have a degree in journalism. I mean, it might be argued that you've written a lot more than, say, journalists your age who went right to J school right out of college.
You know, I'll accept that and feel flattered, except that the best I'll say is, you know, something short of journalism like reportage. I don't believe in bias. I think it's really important to keep bias into your pieces,
right,
which is the opposite opinion of journalism mostly, or you know, the stated opinion of journalism. I just think it's important to disclose your bias and then go from there. And it's just not how the system was built. Now, I think that the whole user-generated world is great. I mean, I've spent decades in it. I would also say that there is still a huge place for people maintaining that element of keeping our government in check and all that. And Todd Anderlich was just on my little goofy podcast talking about his book, which was called Reporting the Revolution. Before it was news, before it was history, it was news. And it's about the American Revolution and the importance of journalism and also propaganda. And that was fascinating to me, because that, to me, is where I am and where some of my friends are right now in this sort of new media space. I feel like we are the pamphleteers of this next media age.
Well, I think that's a great way to encourage people to think about their own blogs, and also to imagine if you were a pamphleteer, what would you pamphleteer for? If we want to use that as a verb, what would you pamphlet for? And that might help people think, too, about their own goals. Well, my guest has been Chris Brogan. He's the author of The Impact Equation, Are You Making Things Happen or Just Making Noise?, with Julian Smith. Their first book, Trust Agents, was a New York Times bestseller. And as consultants and speakers, they've worked with a great number of Fortune 500 companies. If you want to find out more about Chris Brogan, you can go to chrisbrogan.com. You can find him on Twitter at Chris Brogan. And you can find Julian Smith on Twitter at Julian, J-U-L-I-E-N. Chris, I'd love to have you back next time that you come out with a book. Chances are at your current rate, that'll be in 2013.
That is quite true. And thank you so much for having me on. It was a supreme pleasure.
Same here, Chris. And thanks for appearing with me on Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.